Cast by the faithful and for the faithful. I am David Staples, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Welcome, David. Take two. Is it a podcast or a broadcast? Now, are we both today?
It's both. We're not live on YouTube, but we're on YouTube, and we're going to put this up as a podcast. So you're at home. I'm at home. If there's some noise in the background, it's because my neighborhood is currently undergoing neighborhood renewal, and they've got a giant saw hacking up the road in front of my house. So hopefully that won't be too intrusive in terms of the sound of this. So Bruce, last night, the NHL Awards, Connor McDavid won the formerly known as Lester Pearson Award, now known as the Terrible Ted Lindsay Award, without the terrible part. And Taylor Hall won the Hart Trophy Award for the most valuable player in the league. What do you think?
Well, different wording, different voters, different results, obviously. There's some pretty interesting disconnects between the two. First of all, congrats to Taylor Hall. He had a wonderful season, career season. Really did put his team, I would say, he lifted his team. And according to the narrative that apparently you need to be considered for being valuable, according to the PHWA, he did the necessary to lead his team into the playoffs.
You know, Bruce, I think he's actually, again, congratulations to Taylor Hall, but to get to the nut of this, I mean, I think he's probably, in terms of being where he ranks as the best player in the NHL, he's one of them. But this is clearly a time when the best player in the NHL did not win the award. In fact, the best player in the NHL, the players got it right, was Connor McDavid. Wasn't that close? And for some reason, well, we know the reason, this narrative took over with NHL writers. And McDavid finished fifth, Bruce, fifth on their ballot. It's like so unbelievably ridiculous that the best player in the NHL finishes fifth.
Well, he got left off more ballots than he was on. There was 160 votes for each of Hall and MacKinnon. So I'm assuming that was the max number. And McDavid got 78 votes in the top five. 82 writers left him completely out of the top five most valuable player, because apparently the new narrow definition of valuable is, even though this is an award for the regular season, it only matters if your team made the playoffs. It's like they're trying to take the regular season and make it mean nothing more than a qualification tournament, like 6 months of hockey and thousands of dollars for ticket holders. But the only result that matters is, did you make the playoffs? And, oh, yeah, you better not be too good and make the playoffs too well. Or maybe your team would have been good enough to make the playoffs without you, in which case we're not going to consider you for the most valuable player either, Evgeny Malkin. You know, because your team was that strong that, you know.
Or Mr. Kucherov, you're out, Mr. Yeah. Kucherov. You're out, Mr. Malkin. You were just one of many good players on one of the best teams in the league. You know, it's to apply this logic of there's some kind of team element to it. Like, to be in the running, your team has to make the playoffs. Well, why should the teams that just scrape in the playoffs, why should players on those teams be in the running? Really, if it's about how great you make your team, shouldn't it just be the very few teams at the top? If this is being valuable to your team, I mean, clearly the teams that succeed the most are right at the top of the standings in the regular season. Shouldn't we just eliminate all those players?
But those,
I mean,
those
whole thing is ridiculous.
The new narrow definition of the Hart Trophy is the most valuable player to the wild card team, because all three of the finalists were on wild card teams, and the argument in each case was surely made. They wouldn't have made it without player X leading the way for them. And that's probably true. You know, I'm pretty sure that Colorado wouldn't have been in the conversation without Nathan MacKinnon, and the same applies to Taylor Hall. But I don't see the wording in the award saying most valuable player to his team that made the playoffs or that made the wild card, or, you know, it's like who helped his team the most. When Connor McDavid was on the ice for the Oilers, the Oilers scored 57% of the goals. When he was on the bench, they scored 42% of the goals. That's just a huge differential. And the fact that the rest of his team wasn't strong enough to take it over the finish line, I don't know how seriously that diminishes Connor McDavid's value to the team. Like, It's
maybe they need to change the definition. I think they do, Bruce. They should just change it to the most outstanding player. The Hart Trophy mm-hmm. should go to the most outstanding player in the NHL, because this got to the level of being ludicrous this year. It got to the level where the best player, for all of these convoluted, yet, you know, these guys were twisting themselves backwards, upside down, and two ways to Sunday to come up with this note. That's how the only way you can get to have the most outstanding player finish fifth in the voting is if you have some kind of weird mm-hmm. zeitgeist taking over. And that's exactly what happened. These guys clearly can't help themselves. So they need some, and women who vote on this thing. So they need some help. And that would be in the form of changing the vote to make it for the most outstanding player in the NHL, and then we'll get away from all of this utter foolishness.
Well, it became a narrative, and of course, as you know, in the social media age, it's a real echo chamber out there. And this business about this playoff consideration as being sort of the first checkbox before I even consider this player, did his team make the playoffs? Well, that's not written anywhere in the thing, but that became the narrative. And in the defense of the writers, narrative is what they're about. I mean, that's what they do. They write, right? And so,
They were looking for a good story, Bruce. And of course, part of that story is kind of a bitter pill for Oilers fans. And that's the fact that Taylor Hall, one of the parts of the narrative was the Oilers kind of rejected this player, chucked this player out 2 years ago, traded him for Adam mm-hmm. Larson and what some writers call the worst trade ever. And that was a big part. And, you know, it's Taylor Hall showing the Peter Chiarelli, showing the Oilers. And so about half of Oilers fans who hate that trade embrace that. Half kind of don't embrace that at all. I mean, that's the half that I'm in. That, you know, this trade, Bruce, the trade for Larson and Hall, New Jersey was always going to get a win out of it, but to call it the worst trade ever is total hyperbole. I mean, Adam Larson, a year ago at this time, Bruce, mm-hmm. we did a poll at the Cult of Hockey. There's the Cult of Hockey is read by just a wide variety of fans. You know, from people I meet, it's fans who are into analytics, totally not into analytics. Thousands and thousands of people voted in this poll, and the vast majority of them thought the Oilers got a win out of the trade. Now that's different than saying the Oilers won the trade.
They got something they absolutely needed.
And the vast majority of fans were happy with this trade from the Oilers perspective a year ago. And a year from now, it could very well be the same, where the Oilers fans think they get a win out of this trade again. If Adam Larson seems to depend on the health of the player. When Hall was unhealthy last year and had a kind of a year that seemed kind of typical for him in recent years, where he was banged up and didn't reach his full potential. Last year he did. He got his peak season. You know, in projections for Taylor Hall that I had made previously when he was with the Oilers, looked like about 90 points was if everything went right and he cashed in, he had a huge amount of scoring chances and he cashed in on them, he looked like he would get 90 points. He had that peak season this year, but who knows, maybe next year he's banged up and Larson's healthy, which is what happened the previous year. And the vast majority of Oilers fans again think, hey, that trade worked out for the Oilers. And that's how I see it. It New Jersey clearly got a win out of it this year. We'll see who wins it next year.
Yeah, well, I'll return to something I said to you earlier. The Oilers scored 42% of the goals when McDavid was on the bench. And a strong argument could be advanced that if Hall was on the second line that followed McDavid on the ice, that percentage would have been considerably better. And it would have just been a different way to construct the team. Peter Chiarelli chose to bolster his defense and use his key trading chip, and it sure blew up on him. I mean, things could hardly have turned out worse for Peter Chiarelli of what happened to the assets he moved out of here. Because, of course, let's not forget the 16th overall pick that was traded for Griffin Reinhart was immediately turned into Matthew Barzal, who just won the Calder Trophy with the best offensive season by a rookie in 10 years. So that looks bad.
I hated that trade, Bruce. The moment it was made, I'd been watching Griffin Reinhart. I mean, there had been talk the year before about trading the Oilers. I think it was it the fourth overall pick?
Number three, the Draisaitl pick.
Also, all the Oilers insiders were kind of selling that to us. So the Oilers maybe should trade that for Griffin Reinhart. I just was watching Griffin Reinhart in the playoffs. It made no sense to me even then. You know, even as he was leading his team to the Memorial Cup. He just didn't look fast enough and a strong enough skater and a skilled enough player to be worth that kind of high draft pick and trade. His point totals had dropped from his draft year. And then, you know, it's a year later, he had not ripped it up at all in the AHL. He had looked like he had a pretty mediocre, okay-ish maybe AHL season, and they went and made that trade for him. I didn't like it the moment of the trade. I have to say, when Reinhardt came to the Oilers, I liked him more than I thought I was going to. I thought he kind of looked like an okay bottom-pairing NHL defenseman. And I think he can maybe get an NHL job in that role for the right amount of money one day. Have to be soon, because he's not getting any younger. But yeah, that's the trade, honestly. Like, yeah. I know I can see why the Hall trade enrages people. I get it, but that's the trade that just,
well, something for nothing. Those are the worst trades. I mean, Hall for Larson, you can say Oilers gave up a better player than they got back, but at least they got something back. It wasn't like Philip Forsberg for Martin Irrat or Marcus Naslund for Alex Stoyanov. You know, if you want to talk about bad one-for-one trades, let's talk about trades like that. Red Kelly for Mark Rayom, if you want to go back 50 years. There's a long and storied history of bad trades, and some of them were one-for-one. And a whole lot of the real bad one, I mean, to me, the Hall Larson trade is nowhere near the top of that list or the bottom.
Bruce, what about that god-awful Cyclone Taylor trade? I mean, I actually don't know if he was ever traded, but
he probably jumped leagues or something. That was back in those days. But that even predates my time. So, yeah.
That's anyway. What Peter Chiarelli, Bruce, is going to be thinking. They should call Taylor Hall as Cyclone Taylor, because he's the wind that's going to blow Chiarelli right out of his job.
Anyway, two of those Chiarelli's signature trades basically walked across the NHL stage last night with top awards. So it's not going to look any worse on him than that. And to have his own team fall into a sinkhole in the same year that these former assets are tearing it up elsewhere, the optics are horrible, absolutely horrible for Peter Chiarelli. And I'm not surprised that many Oil fans are apoplectic with their GM and the state of their team at this particular moment.
Bruce, there's no doubt it was the best narrative of the NHL. It's a painful one for Oilers fans, but it was the best. It was the narrative of the year, right? It was the Oilers imploding, the Taylor Hall trade going completely, completely wrong, as wrong as it could be, with Larson getting hurt and not having a great year, and Hall having such a great year. So, yeah, like if you were on that I hate the Taylor Hall trade bandwagon, this is your moment and this is your time in the sun. So,
yeah, you got
for you, I guess.
You got a Gatling gun full of ammunition. If that's your original take,
yeah.
But to Hall's credit, he did have a good year. To Connor McDavid's credit, as you point out, he somehow came fifth in the most valuable player award. But the same two guys that were ahead of him on the list of finalists, Nathan MacKinnon and Anze Kopitar, were a distant second and third behind McDavid for first All-Star center. And in fact, McDavid had more points than those two guys combined. And yet somehow they wound up on the short list for the MVP and McDavid didn't. That's just tells you how twisted out of shape the priorities have become, and how, well, in many cases, you know, narrative driven awards. And some of the narratives are good, you know, like for one thing, one way they went, they really broke a tradition last night and gave the same award to two players, Henrik and Daniel Sedin. And you know what? I thought that was fantastic. You know, there was no way to differentiate between those two guys like they had 2 years ago for the Hart Trophy or whatever. This was a recognition of their status in the game and their contributions to society. And it was absolutely correct to break the mold and do that. And I give I'm assuming it was Hockey Writers voting on that award. Whoever did the voting, I give them credit. They got it right.
I think there's been times before when the Hart Trophy winner hasn't been the positional all-star. I seem to recall Bobby Clark winning it.
Yes, yes.
And Phil Esposito being the first all-star center.
Mm-hmm.
So that So now, maybe
Wayne Gretzky.
And
Wayne Gretzky in 1979-80 as an Oiler, and then I believe again in 88-89 with the Kings, he was named MVP, and he didn't make the first All-Star team either time. So yes, there is some precedent for it. It's there's always been some kind of narrative. I mean, Bobby Clark beat out Bobby Orr for that award, for goodness sake, and I still have trouble getting my head around that. He had such a narrative built around Bobby Clark, who was like Jonathan Taves on steroids or something. I don't know, with his all his leadership stuff. And
you can't say nothing bad about Bobby Clark.
He was a vicious hack of a player. I'll say that about Bobby
Clark. Heroes of Team Canada 1972 that beat the Russian team in the series of the century.
By being a vicious hack of a player, yes.
By being an outstanding two-way hockey player on a line with Ron Ellis and Paul Henderson.
Valerie Harlemov's ankle with a vicious, deliberate slash. Yeah, I remember.
You just get hung up on the details, Bruce, you know.
I also remember him spearing Rod Seeling for no apparent reason.
When they were both on Team Canada? Maybe it was Rod Seeling letting in all those goals against Team Canada. You go back and watch those games, and I recommend to anyone who has not seen that series. Those are fascinating and fantastic games to watch. Those first few games, though, with Rod Seeling and Don Ory on defense. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah, if you want to see a mismatch, watch Valerie Harlemov against Don Ory.
In modern, what would it be like? Connor McDavid against Griffin Reinhardt.
Yeah. Connor McDavid against Mike Hoffman. You remember that that goal in Ottawa?
Oh, yeah, he was Hoffman standing still.
Screwed into the ice. Yeah. Anyway, we digress slightly. McDavid did also, of course, he won the first All-Star. And he also got two major awards. I think he walked across that stage more than anyone else last night. And more power to him. I mean, if that's a bad year, I like where we stand, you know.
I sure like what he said when he won the awards, that, you know, he was thankful for Oilers fans for being patient. I guess he's not on Twitter that much if he thinks Oilers fans are patient. But I think actually the vast majority of Oilers fans are pretty patient, and they're still buying the tickets. They're going to still sell out that place, I'm sure, next year. And I was kind of galled initially at this less is more line that Bob Stauffer and the Oilers were selling for next year. But when you look at, because it's an awfully convenient thing for them to say, because they can't do anything. Their hands are completely tied, really, when you look at it. That's why they're reduced to looking at trading the 10th overall pick. They got nothing else they can really do unless some team takes Milan Lucic off their hands or they're willing to trade Oscar Klefbom. But, you know, I think the vast majority of fans and myself, I'm just thinking, you know, if this team is healthy next year and they go into the regular season with essentially much the same lineup as last year, this team can still make some noise and make the playoffs. They should definitely be making the playoffs next year with just a few things going right that went wrong this past year.
I saw a Hockey Insider trade that really sounded good. This was where the Oilers were going to trade. Let me get this straight now.
Is this the Leon Draisaitl of the Rangers thing?
Nope. This is with the Habs, and it was Puljujarvi, Nugent Hopkins. No, it wasn't Draisaitl. Who was the third guy? Talbot. And the number 10 overall for Carey Price, because that's going to solve a 4-for-1, four major assets for Carey Price, a 30-year-old goalie with an 8-year contract, a $10.5 million cap hit with health problems. Let's trade four major assets for that just to make the other trade seem reasonable by comparison.
So that was some anonymous Habs fan.
And then there was Hockey Insider with, 50 followers or whatever. And then there was Habs fans saying, well, forget about Talbot. How about throwing in Draisaitl and we'll think about it? And another Habs fan saying, well, that's three undesirables. And I'm assuming they're talking about all three players, unless they, for some reason, don't desire the 10th overall draft pick. And I mean, some of this foolishness is just way beyond the pale.
That's why we love Habs fans in oil country, Bruce. The funniest one, well, one of the funniest, because this came from Larry Brooks, was this this notion. Larry Brooks of the New York Post. Is he in the Hockey Hall of Fame? Even he might be. Anyway, he put out there, the Rangers are going to take on Lucic. And in return for that, well, we'll also take Leon Draisaitl. And we'll give you
Brady Shea.
No one in Edmonton knew how to pronounce his name until that trade was discussed and laughed at roundly. Now Brooks has made it clear since then that he was just, that's kind of the starting point, and other things are going to be thrown in there. But it's unclear to me exactly what assets the New York Rangers have that could pry Leon Draisaitl away from the Edmonton Oilers. I just think, I'm not sure there is any combination of assets, a reasonable combination of assets on the Rangers that you would trade a young, highly talented, skilled, big two-way center who has shown he can get it done in the playoffs. I mean, the only thing you're going to move for Leon Draisaitl is number one D-man. That would be the only thing, and a real number one D-man, not just a fake one, like, you know, someone who might be one day, or but a real number one D-man. He's got more value right now than Ryan Johansson had when that trade was made for Seth Jones. So that's the kind of value attached to Draisaitl. So all of these Draisaitl trades are just insane. Like, they keep coming up, and it's funny because a lot of Oiler fans put them out there too. Like, there was the Draisaitl and something else, Darnell Nurse for all, was it Ekman Larson? Was that the trade that was put out there? I mean, there's all this, even in Edmonton, you have people wanting to move the guy out. So, you know, that's gotta be related to something else. I don't know what, but.
Yeah, they don't like the way he does line changes, maybe.
Well, we don't like that because we're grumpy old dudes. But
you don't like that.
You don't like it either.
I don't like it either. I it doesn't bother me. I think it's a soccer culture thing. I'm going to stick to that.
But I see. So you're going to give him a culture.
I've been watching soccer, and you see the guy, the way they remonstrate against their teammates and stuff. You know, it's just a different attitude. And Leon needs to sort of get his head into the NHL mindset on that sort of stuff a little better, for sure. But anyway, I digress.
Okay. Well, we both do. All right. Let's leave it there, Bruce. We're going to be back tomorrow, even later today, or who knows when, talking about the draft. There's probably going to be some moves coming. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there might be a big trade. So we'll see what happens. So Bruce, thanks for talking today.
All right. Thanks for listening and for watching, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast. God bless you, Ed Whalen.